This is the professional alcoholics here. The amateurs are out tonight on New Year's Eve. So my name is Damon, and I am an alcoholic. I'm kind of very interested in hearing what I'm going to have to say tonight. It's kind of funny. It's turned out that I'm speaking three times between now and Saturday. I don't know. It's just one of those curious things. That one of the things I've also realized that somehow I got a gift for gab, but I'm also tall, you know, and it's one of those things. I think it has to do a lot in this program with about pride and humility. And for me, one of the amazing words in the big book is creator. I thought that when I first read it, see, when I came in as an atheist, and I was pretty convinced that I could convince you there was no God. I had done a lot of searching and seeking around in my years coming up, and I had read a lot of black words on white paper, and I had not found God in the black words on the white paper. I had not found God in my thoughts. So I was pretty convinced, since I couldn't understand God, that there wasn't a God. And but in coming into this program, it seemed that you guys had a lot of mention of God in the book. And I was out of options. I tried every way I knew to quit drinking on my own. And I quit for a while. I tell you what, when I say I'm an alcoholic, what that means is alcohol is not my problem. If alcohol was my problem and I quit drinking, my problem should go away, right? But you see, I quit drinking. And because I knew I was drinking too much, so I quit drinking. You know, I feel pretty good about myself. You know, and then I get a little restless. You know, get a little bit irritable. And it's all about negative opinions. You know, that 10th tradition. I love the traditions. That 10th tradition says that the fewer opinions we have on outside issues, the less I get drawn into controversy. You know, I went from being somebody who was very much an optimist during the 80s. I had, I had really had some great experiences. And then I started seeing what was wrong with my life, what was wrong with my wife, what was wrong with my job, what was wrong with people. And I started going down that way. And Bill Wilson, who, as many of you know, wrote a good part of the big book, when he first had what he called his hot flash, you know, this spiritual awakening, he was given a book that he just read shortly after that called The Varieties of Religious Experience by a guy named William James. And William James was known as the father of American psychology. And in the early, and in 1900, 1903, something like that, he was invited to speak in Edinburgh, Scotland, which was sort of an amazing thing to have an American go over there to talk to the Europeans. That was kind of unusual. And he did a 7-part lecture, and what he talked about, he said, it starts like an old car in winter, by the way. It's real slow because he's telling you what he's not going to talk about. He's not going to talk about religion. He's not going to talk about dogma. What he wanted to know was, from a psychologist's standpoint, what was the thing that was common among people who had a spiritual awakening? You know? And regardless of their religion or what part of the world they came up in, what was common about it? And there was a couple of very common things. One of them was, we don't find God on the mountaintops, we find him in the valleys. You know, we have, I think if you've had a bad year, I am really glad that you've had a bad year. Because that means, I had a really, really bad, like 3 years, yeah. And they were real bad 3 years. And that's what it took to convince me that maybe there was something, that maybe I couldn't do it. But the other thing he said was that there was a shift, and all these people who had these spiritual awakenings, there was a shift from pessimism to optimism. And you see, in my story goes where I shifted from optimism to pessimism. And I'll tell you what, a lot of my sobriety today has to do with the story I tell myself about what's going on. I was just recently, I've been asking to sponsor a young fellow, and I think he's done a little bit too much spice or whatever, because it's, you know, it's It's really, there was an old cartoon called Ricochet Rabbit. Anybody remember? Bing, bang, bang, Ricochet Rabbit. But he's just bouncing around a little bit. And I said, well, maybe I can simplify this thing down. I mean, what do I, and I asked myself, what do I really do? What do I do to stay sober? So this is why, you know, I can get it out right now. And then if you want to go to sleep, you can go to sleep. And I figured out it's really three things that I'm doing on a regular basis. The first thing I do is I change the story I'm telling myself about what's going on. You see, I used to think that what my opinion about what was going on was what was going on. You know, my opinion about what you're thinking about me is what you're thinking about me, which is funny. And I would try and manage what I thought you were thinking about me. And it was a really big deal, what I thought you were thinking about me, you know. And it has to do with reputation, doesn't it? I mean, so much, I got pleasure by sneaking around. That was my MO, you know. And part of the reason I snuck around, I didn't want to get caught because I wanted to have a good reputation. But I still wanted to do all the things I wanted to do when I wanted to do them. But I still wanted to have people think that I wasn't the kind of person who would do what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it. So, by then, I think Mama mate raised me better than that, you know. And I started feeling guilty, and I think I drank to cover up the guilt, you know. The three things, though, the first one is I changed the story I'm telling myself. Because instead of having a negative story about what you're thinking of me, I can think of, or a negative story about the way you're behaving, I can think, you know, that each and every one of you is some of the most amazing matter on this side of the universe. We're sending out probes trying to find some forms of life somewhere. And here you are, right here. I don't have to send out any probes or spaceships or anything. You're right here. And each and every one of you is an astonishing. I like this little Indian yogi, he said. To understand, to know reality, he said, you must be astonished. You know, this thing called life is amazing. And you know what, for me as an alcoholic, it wasn't enough. You see, it is, my disease is not only, it has to do with not enough. I remember I'd gotten my first full-time job and it earned enough that I bought my first car. You know, my parents didn't buy for me. I bought my first brand new car, driving it out of the Boomershine Pontiac down on 41. But before I got out of the parking lot, there was a Bonneville sitting there. And this is a little Grand Am that I had, you know. And the Bonneville sitting there, and I went, you know, maybe the next car I get will be, you know. I mean, I haven't even made a payment on the car yet. You know, not enough. You know, did you ever have enough? You know, what's neat today is I am enough. Not only am I enough, and not only is the world enough, but it's overflowing. There's so much to do, so much to explore, so much to see, and so little time to do it. You know? And I get to be alive. I get to be here today. I get to experience life, and this is an amazing thing. So I change my story. I tell myself about what's going on. I don't have to do the dishes. I get to do the dishes. I got rid of all my problems. You want to get rid of all your problems? That quick. That quick. You ready? I renamed them situations. And they disappeared. It's just like, where does run go when you stop running? You know, it sounds like my problems are a thing, but they're really a verb. Just like run when it disappears. It's a story I'm telling myself about what's going on. Okay? So that's the first thing I'm doing is changing the story. And, oh, yeah, I'll get the negative story. I have old habits, and that negative story, it pops up pretty regular. But today I get to catch myself. And it tells us on 87 and 88 in the big book, it says we pause when agitated or doubtful. And what do I pause? I pause everything. You know, get into a moment of silence, the space between my thoughts. Get there. I saw the European Space Agency had a German astronaut, and he had taken 12,000 pictures. But he'd taken them in a series. and he runs them fast forward, and you can see the earth turning rapidly underneath. And you can see the Milky Way rising over the sunrise. Not a sunrise, but a Milky Way rise. Okay. I think I need to look at my life from 200 miles up. You know, sometimes I get so myopic, and I'm just looking at the little things, you know. The little things that are going on, and yet there's this huge universe out there. And so there's, I get a chance to look at the world in a different way, to pause when agitated. It tells us we're going to become much more efficient. We don't tire so easily. I don't need nearly as much sleep as I used to need, because I'm not burning up energy foolishly as I was trying to do when I tried to arrange life to suit myself. You know, the idea was if I get my conditions just right, then I'll be happy. Did you ever get your conditions just right? You know, were they ever just right? Did we ever have enough? You see, this is playing chess with the universe. The problem with chess is a wonderful game. It has a limited number of squares, a limited number of pieces with a limited number of moves, a limited number of, you know, and one endgame. Checkmate. Life has an infinite number of pieces with an infinite number of squares with an infinite number of moves. And who knows what the endgame is. So I can't, my mind wants to use the rules of chess to try and manipulate the world around me so I can get the end result that I'm looking for. And then when I get it, even if I get exactly what I thought it was going to be, it didn't. See, I didn't want the circumstances. I didn't want the car. I wanted the way I thought I would feel when I got the car. I wanted the way I thought I was going to feel when I got people to behave the way I wanted them to feel. You know, to behave. And then when I got there, I didn't feel the way I thought I was going to feel. You know? My grandson, he said, he wanted a monster truck, kind of can ride in. Monster truck. Okay, we started looking online. $300. You know, 300. So I had some extra points on my American Express thing or whatever, and so that. And my daughter put some money together. And when my wife, we spent a half a day putting the thing, just about putting the whole thing together. And we got it out there. And my daughter, she ran this big string around the couch like this and everything. And we're all anticipating what he's going to think when he's got this. So, first of all, I'm going to give it to him first, but no. You're going to, let's let him out with the rest of his presents. So, and he's got this little transformer. And he loves this little transformer. So we're saying, oh, why don't you go get your other? No, I'm busy playing with it. You know. And so finally, the little girl who's there, you know, she starts following the string around. You know, and he's going along with his transformer following her while she's, and he goes outside and she goes, and she looks out there and she says, oh, a brand new truck. And he looks at it and goes, I don't want it. And he goes back, 3.5 years old. And I said, you know, we all just laughed, you know, because, and I still catch myself doing that, you know, where I'm, you know, what is he going to think of this grandpa, you know, who has just done this great thing and gotten this neat thing for him? It's just what, and he wants to transform it, the little thing, you know. And you just got to laugh, you know. And I catch, as much as I know about all of this stuff, I still catch myself doing that same thing, but today I can laugh at it. Today I can have it. So the one thing, change my story about what's going on. Because here's the real deal, okay? Nobody knows what's going on. Okay? None of us, all I have is theories about what's going on. What I think happened in my past is not what happened in my past. And I've got siblings, you know, and well, sisters, and they'll say, yeah, remember we went on vacation? No, that's not where we went. We went to this other place. You know? So, and I have all these resentments about things in my past that are maybe make-believe, you know? And I'm telling myself a certain kind of story. So much of this program, the fourth, and what do you think the fourth step is? Change the story we're telling ourselves. What do we look at? We look at resentments, we look at fears, we look at the sex thing, which is really manipulating other people as a means to an end, but, you know, that's, but anyway, so, and all along, we've got this fourth column out there, which is my mistakes. You know, putting aside the wrongs others have done entirely, okay? What were my mistakes? You know? So this program's amazing. The power behind this program is even more amazing. When I first came in, a couldn't find a meeting. I tried to find the depot meeting because I went to the depot, and it said it was on Cherokee Street, but it wasn't at the depot. And so the police that came by to see what I was doing sitting in the parking lot, and they said, I don't know where the meeting is. So the next day, I went to the Saturday Night Specials, which is on Mars Hill at the Presbyterian Church. And I sat there in the parking lot, nobody there. It turns out, at the time, it was 300 yards down the road in two abandoned trailers marked Lutheran Church. And I said, man, these people are anonymous. You know, they're not kidding. I went to Barnes & Noble. This is the remainder of the retail sticker. I paid $12.99 for my big book. You know, that says something about the gift I was given coming in here, which was the gift of willingness. You know, I wanted this thing, and I can't take credit for that. I want you to understand that I have an amazing willingness to do this program, and I can't give you a thimbleful of it. I've been with guys in the jail meetings and all this other stuff, tried to give it. I can't. I can demonstrate what a tapping into this power is like, but I can't. So anyway, the first meeting I actually found was the Ackworth Methodist Church, and the first guy to my right who raised his hand sounded reasonable as a sponsor. And hey, I've been to college, you got a syllabus, you know, and you're supposed to have one of these and one of those and one of those, and it was just a check mark, you know. And I thought everybody could be the same sponsor. I didn't know anything. And I think they can. I think everybody can be a great sponsor, because I don't get people drunk. I don't get them sober. You know, I don't. I don't have that power. So anyway, he raised his hand. And here, my career had been, I'd gone through what I did at the time before when I in my previous job before I got, you know, that I got laid off from, was I was building data centers for Hewlett Packard. And, you know, I was managing the data centers and doing all this stuff. Well, Steve Davis hauled dirt for a living. Okay. Drove one of the, in fact, you know, there's the church up on 41, I think they sold the Christmas, right there at Matt Dobbs, is that the name of it? It's right there. And the gymnasium thing, gymnastics school is up there on that hill. That's where they hauled all the dirt out. And he had, his truck was number 13, I still remember. But he took me out in the parking lot. He said, well, do you believe in God? And I said, nope. He said, how about a power greater than yourself? I said, I don't think so. He said, let me get this right. You're the most powerful thing in the universe? And I paused just a moment, and I said, well, I guess not. He said, well, at least we got hope, you know? And Steve said, he says, I only know one way to do this, and that's to take you by the book. Thank God. You know? That's really, it's really there. You know, it's the owner's manual for the care and maintenance of your average alcoholic, of which I am one. Thank God. You know? So I was complaining about my wife. You see, she just had all this stuff in the house. You know, we didn't have hallways. We had little narrow aisles in between the stuff. And the clutter just everywhere, just lots and lots of clutter. And I'm complaining. He says, hold it. He says, how long did you drink alcoholically? I said, I don't know, 10 years. He said, give her 10 years. I said, well, you know, that's fair, you know. It seems a little extreme, don't you think? But so I started changing the story. Instead of being clutter, it became stuff. And I'd tell people about the fun stuff she does with her stuff. You know, she collects species. I tell everybody I was the first one she collected. So. I mean, we have goats and we have chickens. She's got chickens trained now to where she's got wooden eggs sitting in the little place where they started laying eggs, and they keep coming back, and it's just to the left of the front door. So she just now she's got it set up where the chickens come to her with the eggs, and I think it's, you know, and we've got an alpaca. I got all kinds of birds, you know, on my side of the bedroom, of course, you know, but that's fine. I've gotten to where I like them now. At first, it was on my side of the bed, but now I'm sort of like, that's kind of neat, you know, the finches and the different. The sun starts coming up, and the birds are going off. And now, when I tell people about my wife, they want to meet her. Before I tell people about my wife, and they're glad they didn't know her. Same wife, you know. And yet the quality of my life has improved dramatically because I changed the story I told myself about what was going on. So anyway, and my sobriety date is August the 10th of 2004. And in February of 2005, I started taking meetings down to the Cobb County's finest gated community. And with Mr. Ed, I don't know how many people knew Mr. Ed. I tell you what, he was a character in AA. And to say somebody's a character in AA is really saying something. But he was a character in AA. But he introduced me to service, really, and about commitments. And we haven't been, we've had a kind of hiatus there since May of this year, but I did it for 9 years. Going to the jail meetings, missed probably 3 meetings in 9 years. And but in one of those meetings, there was a guy I'd sponsored, and he showed up in the meeting, and he was surprised because he had forgotten I was doing the meeting. So he comes in, and there his sponsor is in their jail with him, you know. So anyway, when he gets out, he starts talking. He says, you know, he's got a problem. What's your problem? He says, OCD. I said, oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. What do you mean it's wonderful? I said, I don't know, but it's wonderful. I mean, everything's wonderful, so it's got to be wonderful. So anyway, turns out he's now making a living out of OCD. He cleans people's houses, and he's very good at it. My wife hears about it. She keeps pounding me to get the number. You know, when are you going to get that number? The guy that cleans the house. Okay, I'll give you the number. So I give her the number of a guy I'm sponsoring, through the jail meeting and everything. And she hooks up with him, and she just loves him. And he's got this, oh, he does this, and he's really great, and he does all this, and oh, he's got me doing this, and he's got me doing that. He's got her doing the same thing me and my son and daughter have been asking her to do for 20 years. And the house is clean. You know what I figured out? I'm driving down the road, and I'm laughing because I realized the day they met up the first time was 10 years almost to the day. All right. And I just went. Now, when I change my story about what's going on, it doesn't just change my story, I don't think. I think it has a ripple effect out into the world. And I don't get that. I don't understand it, and today I don't try to understand it. My daughter's, her car's, the head gasket blew on it, and I'd put enough money into it over time. And so she said, well, instead of me getting a car, why don't you give me your van, the old one that I had, and then I'll drive it until I can save up some money, and you've been talking about getting a van, so why not? So I go, all right. So I drive this old cargo van around for a little bit, and I had a kind of nice check from one of my clients, and I put it in the bank, and okay, I'm going to go start car shopping, deal with it, you know, car salesman, you know. And I'll, you got a car salesman here? Yeah. Well, so I don't want to deal with those car salesmen. But anyway, so I go up to CarMax, and I put in like 10, and that's not a problem. So I bump it up to 13,000, and one car shows up, this Honda Odyssey. Well, it's kind of interesting because 3 different people had told me if I was going to replace my van, they thought I'd love the Honda Odyssey. I said, that's kind of spooky. I mean, it wasn't like 10 cars, it was one. And I said, well, now I begin to trust this kind of stuff. Okay, this isn't, I'm telling you just a few. These are happening to me all the time. So I trust it. This is about relying on God. Okay, this isn't about like believing in God. This is about relying in God. So I said, I better go look at this. So I go out and they pull it. It's a cream puff. I mean, it's just, there's not a stain on the carpet. I mean, all the stuff, the owner's manual is in, the whole deal. 2.9% financing, I got a big down payment on it. I went, I don't think God wants me to spend any time shopping. You know? So I called my wife and said, I think I'm going to buy it. And she's fine, you know. get home, and she's ready to drive it around. She's had a couple of glasses of wine. She's ready to have it. Next day, though, next day she's going, you didn't shop for that right. Well, Clark Howard says you should have not said, you're right. You know, you're right. Probably should have shopped better. 3 weeks later, I get my license plate. The last four digits are 1004. My sobriety date is 8/10/04. I don't get that. You know? My wife, I tell her, and she says, you're kidding. And I go, there's 10,000 numbers that could have been. And I don't understand how the universe could be structured such that it communicates to you through license plates. I don't try to understand that. But I rely on it today. You know? I changed my story about what's going on. The second thing I've done is when I change my story or any of the things I'm trying to do, I'm trying to add to the quality of the lives of the people around me. I don't need to add to the quality of my life. I spent way too much time doing that. Don't try that. Doesn't work. What I find out is I'm trying to add to the quality of your life. Because, you see, I'm at my destination. I'm at the only destination there's ever been, which is right here, right now. I found out that becoming is very unbecoming. How much time do I spend becoming? Oh, when I get there, then I'll be happy. Back into conditions again. So if I'm thinking about becoming at all, it means, oh, when I get to that particular point, then I'll be happy. When I get this much sobriety, then I'll be happy. When I get to this point, then I'll be happy. And it never happens. I had to tell myself, and part of the story I tell myself is I'm at my destination. Right here, right now. It's the only time. And there isn't. One thing that struck me the other day was that nothing real is about to happen. Nothing real is about to happen. What's real is happening. Nothing real is about to happen. Okay? Anything I think is about to happen is not what's going to happen. So all of a sudden I can be right here, right now, in the presence of something I don't understand. Moving in the presence of something. And fully appreciating right here, right now. What's this got to do with not drinking? All of those things are things that take away, get rid of, those things that are making me restless, irritable, and discontent. I'm trying to become this, and you're blocking me from becoming that. See, it's your fault. Victim. Anybody here come in as a victim? I'll tell you what, victims don't last very long in AA. You know? I have to lose my victim status here. You know, it's... And what is quality? You know, trying to add to the quality of the lives of the people around me. I think it is that which happens when I practice the principles. And I've got two. I did a little... I really wanted to explore all the principles. You know, you see all these big lists of principles, and what are the principles, and there's the 12 that roughly align to the 12 steps. When I came in, I went to 8111, and I saw them sitting on the wall at 8111, and that roughly correspond. And so I wrote them down for two reasons. First of all, my memory was not that good when I came in. And the other thing was my handwriting was terrible. You know, the shakes like this. So I'd write them real slowly like that. And so I was doing two things at once. And somebody said, oh, those are pretty cool. You know, I had not seen it. And I said, okay. And I handed it to them. And so I wrote it out again. And somebody else wanted it. So here, have this. And then I started realizing there's others. You know, I can't just be honest. I need to be sensible, tactful, and considerate. You know, I need to have right thinking. Not tell somebody what I think, but have right thinking and then tell them what I think. Sensible, tactful, considerate. I needed to be anonymity and abstinence are in there. You know, there's pray, meditate, listen, act. You know, there's verbs in there. There's all these different things that I have. And I would get into the different meetings and I would collect up different principles that I heard until I got kind of a list that pretty much didn't repeat itself. One of my favorite ones I heard, it's not even in the book, but I love it. And that is gentleness of spirit. And I say a lot. The whole thing is, I can tell really gentleness is spirit. And I can be there if I'm at my destination. If I'm not trying to get there and I don't need you to help me to get there and I'm already right here, then it's real easy to be gentle. But it all boiled down to two for me. And I just find out that if I act with kindness and integrity, now those are some complex concepts. Kindness, first of all, is related to the word kin, which means family. You know, and Shakespeare said more than kin and less than kind. You know, but it's related that way. So it's easy to be kind when I can think of you as part of me. Now, what is the difference between two cells in my body, my heart and my lungs, and you and me? They're just membranes, you know. And yet, my cells are no less me than my organs are. You know, it's all one thing. And separateness is an illusion. I wanted to talk a little bit about mentors. I've got one sponsor, but I've got a number of mentors. And some of them I've known and some of them I've never met. Chuck Chamberlain is one of my mentors, I think. And he said there's one problem that includes all problems, and that is conscious separation from. One of the things when I was reading and studying about religion, I took Eastern history and philosophy as my undergraduate degree. And one of the things I read about and I realized was at the heart of every great religion, at its very heart, is the concept of unity. Connectedness. I think an alcoholic in our cups is one of the loneliest creatures on earth. Did you feel separated out there? You know? And I was sitting, I was cutting every thread I could because I got pleasure by sneaking around fewer people I knew, less time. You know, I didn't want to have to deal with you anymore. I was tired of trying to get what, you know, to change. I just got tired. Today, I'm so deeply connected to so many different people, and not only in the program, but also in my work and other areas. I'm a Mayretta ladies. There's these ladies that got the laptops, and they need to know how to work with that. My Damon said, my laptop is not doing what I wanted to do. Can you come over here and take a look at it now? I kid people, there's three towns around here. There's Marietta, which is where the Yankees come down with their riding vacuum cleaners, you know, in their big houses. And then there's Murrieta, where you got your gun rack and your pickup truck. Of course, my all-time favorite is Murrieta, where if your family hadn't been here since the fall of the war, you just nobody talk. If you have to ask which war, you're in the wrong place. But these are things I get to do. I get to be connected. You know, because I'm not trying to get there, I'm not so busy worrying about this, how can you help me get there, that I can find out about you. And am I always on the beam? No. But when I get quality in my life, it's when I'm being able to be fully present and give somebody my full attention right there in front of me. I like to say that the only thing I have on my plate is what's on my fork. You know, one bite at a time. If I can just take that one bite. Because every time I look down, the plate's changing. You know? And then I used to get worried because the plate was changing. Now I go, hey, cool, the plate changed. What a neat thing, the plate changes. I've got an amazing week going on here. It was 2 weeks in a row, maybe it's really been three, and I didn't. None of those times it looked like I could get it all done, and it's all gotten done. But each time I keep telling myself, you've got a really big God. You see, if I ever get fearful, I know the problem is a small God. And I have to remind myself, I got a really big God. I got the God of the license plate, remember? Let me tell you about my sponsor. Steve Davis, who took me through the steps and everything, and that was in August of 04 that we met. In November of 05, I get a call from him, and he says, I'm having a heart attack. He says, don't worry about coming down to the hospital. I got the ambulance coming, all of that. You know, but that guy you're sponsoring, you know, I was just thinking, you might want to talk to him about this, and this. He's having a heart attack, and he's talking to me about what I need to do to help do something in the program. I mean, that guy's on the ball, you know. And I told my son about, you know, what was going on. And he went back to his apartment, and his roommate came out and said, my dad's having a heart attack. my son and his son weren't just friends, they were roommates, and we didn't know it. The first guy to my right at the first meeting I found in Cobb County. I don't know about you guys, but I got a big guy. And I just have to keep reminding him. And you know, what's crazy is a day goes by when I don't see one of those. That's the thing that's astonishing today. Not that it's just every day something like that happens. So as I go into the third thing, I find that I do is to be useful. I can add to the quality of some people's lives by not just sitting on my couch the way I had been behaving. Me sitting on my couch, not getting out into the world and driving, was adding to the quality of everybody's life. Okay? So I can add to the quality of people's lives by not being there, you know, if I'm at them. But to be useful. To the different areas, the going to the jails is one of the things. The CDs I hand out, started with a resentment. The guys in the jail have a great phrase. They say, the trouble with trouble is it starts out looking like fun. I found out something really crazy. The funny thing about fun, it starts out looking like trouble. The fourth step looks like trouble. The fifth step looks like trouble. But it turns out to be a lot of fun because I get to take off this backpack full of rocks I've been carrying around. And I thought it was just normal. So today, where was I at with that one? Anybody listening? Anybody listening? I'm sorry?
The rock.
Oh, yeah, the carrying the rock. No, I know about that one. Oh, yes, I'm sorry? The third thing about being useful and the various things that I was doing to be useful. Oh, yes, and the CDs. That's what it was, the CDs. So the CDs, I was working with this lawyer on his computers, you know, in his office. And he comes in, he gives me a CD, and he says, can you make copies of this? And I see it's commercially done. And I'm thinking, this hypocrite, you know, it's copyrighted stuff, you know. He wants me to make copies. And he flew all the way down to Dallas to go to a roundup, and he brings back one CD. Cheap son of a gun, you know. He's got this big house, you know, fancy cars, and it's not right, it's rubber, you know. There was an old cartoon of the old dog world, really, like that. And anyway, but the CD was Ed Newton. And I got a chance to meet Ed. He was one of the few men I looked up to. He was 6'11". Ed was an amazing guy. And his story of forgiveness made the national news. And I thought, I wonder if there's more of this. And then we had the depot meeting, and Santa Claus showed up at the depot meeting in December. John Cornelius and the professional Santa Claus. And he had a cassette of a talk he did. He said, can you convert this to CD for me? And I went, I think so. And other people have done it. It's technical. I do a lot with technical I can do. So I started doing that, and people started bringing me cassettes, and I started converting the cassettes, and they were handing me gold. They were handing me wellness. They were handing me mentors. People, I could hear what they were doing, how they were living their lives, and I began to Sandy Beach, you know, Chuck Chamberlain, you know, Earl Hightower, all of these different people, and I've gotten to meet them. I got to talk to Sandy Beach before he passed. I've talked with him a couple of times. Number of people that I've met, Ken Devaney. I spent about 2 or 3 hours with Ken. It's just neat, very reachable, very attainable. Just out, and I've had a number of these people I've met, and I said, there's a certain thing, I don't know if you call it it, you know, in the program, is they wanted what they had. You know, they were okay with who they were and what they had. For a large measure, not all the time, but, you know, for a large measure. And that's what I call my mentors. And then they asked Pedro, who used to do the big book study down at the Extension, and he was speaking over at the North Marietta AA, and somebody asked me if I couldn't record it. I said, I guess so, and I went to Circuit City. They're out of business, but my microphone I bought from them is still working. And so I used it to record all kinds of folks now. And what turned out with one CD is a collection of over 2,000 now. And there's now it's also a website where there's over 600 on the website. And I've never taken a dime for any of the CDs. It's just going to get messy to do all that. And people donate. One guy gave me a bag of 500. 500, you know, come on. And then if I need to, I'll go buy some or whatever. And they're making their way out to Torrance, California, and then somebody will send me some back from there. And then they make them over here. And I found out I went into the Caribbean here recently, you know. CDs have gone there. But I don't know what it is about me, that willingness. I can't take credit for that. It's a gift. You see, the thing about Creator in the Big Book is I didn't create me. You see, I used to think I had something to do with creating me, that I could take credit for something I did or something. I didn't choose my parents. I didn't pick my DNA. How many ancestors do you have? Whoa. What did I have to do with any of those? Doing anything they needed to do. So everything I am is a gift. You know, I thought it was something was like religion. By the way, the Supreme Court agreed, because we've got Creator in there and other things. And then a Supreme Court case in 1999 decided that for the purposes of the federal prison system, AA is a religion. You know what AA's opinion was on that? Nothing. They had their very status as an organization in front of the Supreme Court, and they had no opinion. It was an outside issue. This is an amazing organization. I don't have to come to AA. I get to, you know. And what did I wind up doing? I wind up drinking myself stupid, you know, for 10 years. Isolating. In the end, I was isolated in my house, drinking a fifth of vodka a day. Just cut off every connection I had with anybody around. I would barely make it out to get to the ATM so I could get my money done. And I'd have the shakes like this. And I was wondering, boy, if I put in the pin 3 or 4 times, they'll take away my money and I won't be able to get my solution. You see, because alcohol is not my problem. Alcohol was my solution. If I'm an alcoholic, alcohol was my solution. And it stopped working. It worked for a time, but it stopped working. And I'll tell you this. The reason I'm powerless over alcohol is when I take a drink of alcohol, I'm absolutely convinced I will become a different person. Anybody else been told you become a different person? How could I decide how much that guy's going to drink? And here's the neat thing about it. I have absolutely no need. All the reasons for drinking have been taken away by this power behind the principles. There's so many different areas. I'm just come off 2 years where I've been the secretary for District 14C. I went down to Macon, and going down to Macon, I looked on the website, and there's the meeting schedule. And I said, oh, well, where's the database behind the meeting schedule? And they said, what do you mean? I mean, because it's just this big table number. It's not in any way like data. And they said, no, that's it. That's the only place you have yeah, that's it. I went, somebody better do something about this. Next quarter, somebody better do something. Next quarter, somebody better do something. My name is Somebody. And I wound, because I know how to do this stuff, and I wound up typing in every meeting in the state of Georgia into a database. And it was wonderful. And it was late night, so it was like 3 o'clock in the morning, just converting and typing it over. And I got the database working, and they're using it across the state. You're still seeing the same format, because AA moves very slowly. Okay, I love that about AA. It should move very slowly. It's very cool that it moves slowly. But you see, I can't take credit for that. You know, all the things that gave me the ability to do that are gifts that I was given because I was put together the way I'm put together. And if I can just be grateful for the way I'm put together and find out, the Chinese have a concept, Tay, it has to do with virtue. And it's not virtue kind of like we think in the West. It's like the virtue of a healing plant. You know, the willow bark is a source for aspirin. Now, what good does it do the willow tree to cure your headache? It's just part of the way it's put together. So I think so much of this program is about finding out what my assets are. not all the bad things I did. We're doing a moral inventory. A moral inventory says, find out what's good about you so that then I can add to the quality of the lives of the people around me and be useful. I'm useful because of the way I'm put together, because of the way I was created. There's a song I'm going to finish up with that is a guy named Trevor Hall. This is a white guy that sings in a Rastafarian style. It's kind of fun, but he's very spiritual. And I love this one song. It's called Unity. And I was listening to it today and crying when I listened to it just because it struck me how real this is for me today. And it says, I don't want to reason anymore about the one I love, the one I love. I don't want to reason anymore about God above, God above. I just want to melt away in all his grace, stripped away into that sacred place where there's no more you and me, no more they and we, just unity. And for that, I am so, so grateful. Thank you. Thank you.